Okay, good morning, everybody. A good in Erev Shabbos. Welcome back to our Shabbos Kodesh class learning. It is Erev Shabbos. We have a double parsha on Chutzarts this week, Chukas Balak. So let us enrich our Erev Shabbos and our Shabbos and our preparations and our Kedusha Shabbos and Ahava Shabbos through this class. Our thanks, as always, to our generous host. Can I still call them our host? I think so. And sponsors, Rivka and Mr. Fuchs, the zchus of this Torah learning that we share and the enhancement of our Shabbos Kodesh should bring zchusim for them. Verichus yamim and shanim, they should celebrate many, many, observe many, many Shabbosos in good health and only nachas to enjoy. So we are on page 27. I know I sent it out actually after we called in, but if you look at WhatsApp, I just sent you the two pages. If you're interested in following along inside, if it's too confusing for you, I read everything and expand upon it anyway. So you are welcome to just listen if that's better for you. So we're at the top of page 27. Actually, we're just going to go back to the bottom of page 26, just so that we don't start in the middle of a topic, so we remember what we were speaking about. Okay, last week we spoke very beautifully, not last week, actually last class, which was 2 weeks ago, we did a beautiful piece of Masechta Shabbos, Kufiyot Tes Amud Beis, if you remember, that every Shabbos, Leil Shabbos, two Malachim come home from Beis Knesset with the Baal HaBayis. And the Malach Tov gives a bracha if Shabbos is ready. If the house, this is a 1 minute recap from last week. If the bed is made and the table is set and the house is ready for Shabbos, you have a bracha he writes on that the next Shabbos should also be like this. You should have many more Shabbos like this. And the Malach Ra, if he sees that the house is not Shabbos ready, you get a bracha because mitzvah goros, mitzvah veir goros, veira. The Malach Ra will give you a bracha, may it be his will that you should have many more Shabbosos like this, which is not a complimentary bracha. And we spoke about the importance of having the house prepared for Shabbos and also setting the table for Motzei Shabbos. So I'm starting at the last paragraph on the bottom of page 26, just to recap, we read this already. There's a story about one of the Rebbes of Slonim, who every Motzei Shabbos would give his wife money for the coming week's expenses. 1 week he had no money to give her, and when his wife saw this, she burst into tears. The Rebbe, who was totally immersed in holy matters, assumed that she was crying simply because Shabbos had left. It was Motzei Shabbos, and she starts crying. She was crying because she didn't get money for the coming week. He thought she's crying because Shabbos left, and therefore Kedusha left. It didn't even occur to him that she would cry over a lack of money. So he turned to her, and he said, "Do not feel bad, dear Rebbetzin. Next week, Shabbos will come again." So he was consoling her that Shabbos has come again. That is not why she was crying. Rav Shimshon Pinkas brings us this vignette about one of the Rebbes of Slonim to illustrate how the real Kedoshim feel about Shabbos. You don't need to cry. Don't worry, Shabbos will come again. Top of page 27, new information. It would seem that crying when Shabbos leaves is a proper response. You should be upset. We would think that we should be upset when Shabbos leaves. Yet Chazal tell us the opposite. They instruct us, and we saw it in the Gemara last time, to joyfully escort the Shabbos queen as she leaves. And that is the halacha. We should have a melaveh malka. Melaveh malka means melaveh malka, means to accompany the queen. So what we're really doing is accompanying the queen as she leaves. What is all this joy about? Why am I not sad? I should be distraught that the queen is leaving the town. Should be distraught Shabbos is leaving the week. Not happy. So Rapinka says, let's imagine a certain Jew who owns a grocery store. The Pesach season arrives, his store is extremely busy. As fast as he fills up the shelves, people empty them off. After Pesach, he's not sad at all. Why? Even though you have nothing left on the shelf, his pockets are bulging from the holiday purchases. Pesach came and went, leaving behind abundant blessing. So that's the nimshal with Shabbos. Yes, you don't have Shabbos anymore, but you have the abundant blessing of Shabbos. And just the other week, I was listening to a shir by Rabbi Zev Lef from Moshe Matisyahu in Eretz Yisrael, Zev Lef Shlita, and he quotes the Zohar, and I wrote it down actually after I heard the shir. It was a week and a half ago or so, just so I would remember to tell it to you. Rabbi Zev Lef quotes the Zohar that Shabbos fuels the entire week. Quote, Rabbi Zev Lef, quoting the Zohar, said, Shabbos fuels the entire week. So it is with every Jew, even those of us who do not own a grocery store. Pesach leaves behind blessing for each and every one of us. So after Pesach, you have an idea of Cherus. We left Egypt, and when Pesach leaves, the Yom Tov leaves, but a Jew should feel elevated. They should feel different. They should feel that they are free. The matzah we eat during Pesach, did I miss a sentence? No. The matzah we eat during Pesach blesses us with the power of Emunah, and heals our soul. So I'll tell you that the Zohar calls matzah the lechem de meimenusa, from the word Emunah, the Aramaic, the bread of Emunah, And it calls Sukkis the Sukkah, the Sukkah Tzila, the Meimenusa. Sukkis is termed by the Zohar, the Sukkah itself, as the shade of Emunah, shade, S-H-A-D-E. And Pesach, the matzah, is known as the bread of Emunah. And perhaps that's what Pinchas is referring to here when he says, on Pesach, the matzah you eat blesses you with the power of Emunah. This bread of affliction represents the Emunah of our forefathers, that even in the most difficult times, that in the time of Avdus and Inui, and Shibud Mitzrayim, that we never gave up on the Emunah that the Ribbono Shel Olam would come and redeem us. How apropos to the matzav in the world today. How apropos. When a person feels that all there is matzah and maror, I'm not talking about an intermediate home, Baruch Hashem, we should live and be well, but when we look at the world around us, we have to hang on to that emunah of the bread of affliction, which represents the emunah in all generations, the root of which is Aleph Mem Nun, which stands for Kel Melech Ne'aman, that the Ribbono Shel Olam will absolutely redeem us. So too, so that's what Pinchas says, even though Pesach left, the matzah of Pesach, the Lechem Demei Menusa, heals your soul. You need to carry that with you the whole year. Furthermore, you come to Sukkos, which is half a year later. You sit in the Sukkah, the Tzila, Tzel, the shade of Emunah. We went into the desert. We didn't know how we would be protected. Lechtech acharei b'midbar beretz lo zaruah zacharti lechesed nurayich. God remembers the chesed that we did with him in our youth. Ahavas kululasayich. We loved him like a kala, loves the chesed. And even though we didn't know where we would live or where we would have shelter, we walked into the wilderness. And so too today. There's so much uncertainty around us in the world. There's so much upheaval, anarchy, lawlessness, anti-Semitism tremendously on the rise again. And we have to remember these two foundations, if you will, of our people. And they're half a year apart. So Pesach gets us to Sukkos, the Lechem Demei Menusa, and Sukkos gets us to Pesach, the Tzil Demei Menusa. So even though you might be sad when the Yom Tov leaves, nevertheless, says Rav Shimshon Pinchas, Pesach leaves behind blessing for each and every one of us. I just want to unlock the call. 1 minute, please.
The meeting is locked. The meeting has been unlocked.
Okay, let's continue. The meeting has been unlocked. So that is what Rav Shimshon Pinchas uses, this idea of Pesach, as an example of how you should feel over Shabbos. So again, going back to the start of that paragraph, so it is with every Jew, even those who do not own the grocery store. You know, my grandfather writes in his memoirs, I can't quote them exactly, I don't have them in front of me, but my grandfather, Lo Vashom Yitzchak Ben Moshe, writes in his Holocaust memoirs that in one of the work camps, he was in seven camps in 3 years. His article is entitled, his memoir is entitled, In Seven Camps in 3 Years. And I consider it such a zchus to the Ribbono Shel Olam that I have this piece, that we have this piece. My grandfather, he was nifter very suddenly from a brain aneurysm. I don't even know if he was even 70. He lost his wife and daughter in the Holocaust. He remarried. I was only just 4 years old. He didn't even live to really know his grandchildren. We didn't have a relationship with him, very unfortunately. But Baruch Hashem, we have his memoirs. And he writes in his memoirs that Pesach in the work camp of Budzin, B-U-D-Z-H-I-N, Budzin, in a Gehenna on earth, they tried to set up some sort of a kitchen, Pesach kitchen. Whoever didn't want to eat leaven didn't have to. They tried to have only potatoes. So that's the ultimate expression of Lechem de Meimenusa, when we eat the bread of affliction, Halachma Anya Diachalu Avasana Bar de Mitzrayim, this is a bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Egypt, Mamish affliction. Amish, terrible tears, pain, maror, vayimaru es chayim. But nevertheless, that eating of that bread of affliction leaves you with emunah. So when Pesach leaves, what you have is you don't have the Yom Tov anymore, but it has left a blessing for each and every one of us, says Rav Pinchas. The matzah we eat during Pesach blesses us with the power of emunah. It heals our souls. Now, says Rav Pinchas, next paragraph, excuse me. Let's say the king comes to us for a visit. It is the way of royalty to leave behind a token of his majesty's appreciation for the hospitality he has received. So if a king comes, you imagine that when he leaves, he will pay you royally for hosting him because he's the king, because his royal treasury is vast. So if he comes, he's going to pay you handsomely for being there. Thus, when the king leaves, although we enjoyed his presence, we surely have something to be happy about. What do we have to be happy about? The generous gifts he brought us, which have made us rich. So the king leaves you something. So even though the king is not there anymore, The gift, the payment, in this case, the kedusha of Shabbos, is still there. And I'm not sure Rabbi Zev left say between last time shir and this time shir, quoting the Zohar, that Shabbos fuels the entire week. So you could say, just like Pesach fuels half a year to Sukkot, and Sukkot fuels half a year to Pesach, and every week you have a mini recharge of Shabbos. You know, last week, this is a cute story, last week, talking about fueling the entire week. My boys were helping me prepare for Shabbos, so it was, you know, a very busy morning, peel this, peel that, chop this, chop that, wash this, wash that. So in the middle, they were looking around, they're saying, where are the other siblings? Other siblings are not available at that time. So I asked them to do the next job, so they said, 1 second, and they sat where we keep the phone chargers, and they made a joke. They said, we're recharging, we're on low battery. It was very cute. But sometimes in life, we feel that Baruch Hashem, they are exceptionally helpful, Baruch Hashem, but it was just very cute. Recharging, it says low battery, they told me. And the reality is that sometimes you might feel low battery. I might feel low battery. When we look at the world around us, sometimes you talk or feel low battery, but you have to remember that Shabbos is an oasis of Kedusha. And even though we have Malava Malka escorting the queen out, nevertheless, when the king, says Rav Shimshon Pinkas, comes to your house for a visit, his majesty certainly appreciates the hospitality he has received. And therefore, when he leaves, we have so much to be happy about, which is what? The generous gift he brought us, which have made us rich. So I was thinking, I don't know why, if it's because he speaks about Pesach in the previous paragraph, and then this paragraph made me think of Dayenu. Why did it make me think of Dayenu? Excuse me. Because in Dayenu we say, if you would have given us this, it would be enough, even if we don't have the next thing. And that's what this made me think of. I guess also because in the previous paragraph he's talking about Pesach, which is that we say, even though you're not here anymore, Hashem, it's enough that you were here for a day. So it's enough that Hashem was here for Shabbos. Now you're not here anymore, Dayenu. So I'm going to share a couple of insights. The first one just related to Matan Torah and what mitzvahs do for us. I am now quoting from the Rav Schwab Haggadah, from the Shiurim and writings of Rav Shimon Schwab. Okay? And then I will quote from Rav Yisachar Fran, and the insight from Rav Yisachar Fran specifically deals with Shabbos. So the first one that I'm going to quote from the Rav Schwab Haggadah relates to mitzvahs in general. And also, of course, Shabbos is a mitzvah, so we will apply it to Shabbos. What do the mitzvahs in general do for the Bnei Yisrael? And what do mitzvahs in general do for the whole world? What benefit do we have when we keep Shabbos? How are we changing ourselves, and how are we changing the world through Shmiras mitzvahs and Asiyas mitzvahs? So Rav Schwab is commenting on, Ilu kervanu lefnei Har Sinai, had God brought us before Har Sinai, v'lo nasan lanu es haTorah, not given us the Torah, dayenu would have been enough for us. So it's a very, very famous question. Perhaps this is the most oft-spoken about stanza of Dayenu. If we would have gone to Har Sinai and not got the Torah, it would have been enough for us. What are we possibly talking about here? So we all know the mashal with the perfume factory or the leather tannery. If you go in, you don't buy anything, you're still going to smell like perfume or like leather tanning when you go out. But he has a very fascinating, fascinating piece here. So Rav Schwab teaches, as we have explained, many mitzvahs were given to the Jews even before Matan Torah. Okay? And we know that clearly. Okay? The Gemara tells us, he quotes Maseches Sanhedrin, when the Jews stood at the foot of Har Sinai, awaiting the giving of the Torah, Moshe wrote what's called the Sefer HaBris, the Book of the Covenant, which contained all the parashas from Bereishis until Matan Torah, including the mitzvahs we were commanded at Marah. So we were commanded mitzvahs at Marah, which is in Parashas Bishalach. Parashas Bishalach, the end of Perek Tesvav, when we were in Mara, that's where the water was bitter. Moshe threw in a stick, the water became sweet, and then the pasuk says, "Sham samlo chok u'mishpat v'sham nisau." There Moshe gave us chok and mishpat, and there we were tested. And then you move on to Perek Tzayin with the man, and Perek Tzayin mechamas amalek. But Parashas Bishalach precedes Matan Torah and precedes Yisroel. But there we got a few mitzvos. What mitzvos? Rashi quotes it on the Chumash. We got Shabbos. So listen again, Shabbos was given to us at Marah. That is in Sefer Shemos, the end of Perek Tezvav. That's way before Matan Torah, which is in Perek Chaf. Shabbos, Kibbur Ava'im, some say Parah Aduma, and Lot Dinin, judicial laws. Those were the mitzvahs given at Marah. Furthermore, we had the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, were reiterated to them as well at that time. Furthermore, we were taught all the laws of Pesach. Why? Because Pesach is Parshas Bo, Perek Yud Beis. We have all the mitzvahs of Korban Pesach. So let's try this again. Parshas Bo, we have, well, never mind, he doesn't write it here. But also, we have Rosh Chodesh. Rav Schwab does not include that, but Rosh Chodesh is the first mitzvah, and Perek Yud-Beis of Parshat. So we have Rosh Chodesh, we have all the mitzvahs pertaining to Pesach, which is multitudes of mitzvahs. We have matzah, we have maror, we have tzli'esh, we have karban pesach, how to eat it. We have mitzvah of tefillin at the end of Parshas Bo. Then you come to Bishalach, where you have mara, you have kibur va'im slash para aduma, you have Shabbos, you have dinim. Furthermore, you have the seven mitzvahs b'nei noach. So that's a lot of mitzvahs. And sometimes when we think of matzah and Torah, we think, oh, we got the Torah now. But the truth is, look how many mitzvahs we had before. So how do we understand this? So Rav Schwab writes, considering that the Jews received so much Torah before it was even given to them, technically, we might believe that the giving of Torah at Sinai, which is with its 613 mitzvahs, was merely an addition or expansion upon what we received until that point. What is the difference between what we got before and what we got after? If we already got Shabbos and Mara, Sham Sam Lechok and Mishpah, Vasham Nisa, and Rashi says, Shabbos Paraduma, or Kibbutz Aim and Dinim, so then what's Zachor Shema Shabbos Akacho, which we heard in the Saras Adibros, or Shema Shema Shabbos Akacho, Achaz Dibrakim, Shtaim Zushamati? I don't understand. So when did we get Shabbos at Mara or on Matan Torah? It seems we got it on Mara. So why did we get a Shabbos again at Matan Torah? If I already got it on Mara, why do you need to tell me? Zachor Shema Shabbos Akacho. Sheishus Yamim Tavo, Vesisikom Echtach. I already got Shabbos. So did I get Shabbos already? Did I get Shabbos already? The answer is I did get Shabbos already. So why do I need to get it again? What's the difference between Shabbos, the command of Shabbos pre-Matan Torah, and the command of Shabbos post-Matan Torah? Isn't it the same mitzvah? So while it might be the same mitzvah, it adds a completely different dimension to the existence of mankind and the world. And he offers a beautiful chiddush here. Here we go. Says Rav Schwab, with Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, the entire world, the upper world, the spiritual world, the lower world, the physical world, all worlds underwent a major transformation. What was the transformation? Torah mitzvahs became intimately woven into the fabric of all existence, now becoming subject and sensitive to the impact of our observance of mitzvahs. So after Matan Torah, or with the giving of the Torah, all worlds, the upper spiritual world, the lower physical world, underwent a major transformation in that Torah mitzvahs, listen carefully, this is the whole foundation of his pshat, became intimately woven into the fabric of existence. As a result of Matan Torah, the mitzvahs now have a profound effect on the physical and metaphysical worlds. The physical world, this world of Olam Hazar, very physical-based world, and metaphysical world, spiritual worlds. For example, while the various prohibitions that were given to us before Har Sinai were binding upon us, that was binding upon us as individuals, they were mandates instructing human behavior. So he says, for example, the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, which, by the way, my daughter taught me, she learned in Yedios Kalios, a good way to remember the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. Ready? If you know them off by heart, great. If you need help remembering them, like I do, and my daughter told me a very easy way to remember them. First of all, they're the three Yarog Val Yavors. So that's about the Zar Dil Rai Shvichas Dam. Those are very easy because we know the three Yarog Val Yavors. So what are the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach? Three Yarog Val Yavors. About the Zar Dil Rai Shvichas Dam. And then it's Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. I have to think of it as Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Aleph is Achdus Hashem, there is one God. Beis is Birkas Hashem, which is a metaphor, if you will, a euphemism for it's forbidden to curse God. We don't say that, so we say Birkas Hashem. Gimel is Gazel, and Dalet is Dinim. So these are the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach by which the whole world is supposed to abide. Why the whole world should abide, they don't, but they're supposed to. Well, the Zargil, Arayah, Shvichus, Damim, and then Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Achdus Hashem, Birkas Hashem, Gezel, and Dinin. So, what was the difference? If we were told before Matan Torah, it was binding upon us also, the Shalom Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Achdus Hashem. Now, what's the difference between Anoche Hashem El Kach, Asher Hotzei Sichem, Meretz Yitzchak, Beis Avadam? We already got Achdus Hashem with the seven Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. If we got Avodah Zarah and the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, then why do we have to be told, Lo Yelcha Eloi Mecherim Al Panai? If we're told not to do Gilei Arayis with the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, why do you need Lo Tinaf? If you're told not to do Gezel, why do you need Lo Tignov? If you're told that Mar to keep Shabbos, why do I need Zachar Sem Shabbos Akacho? I hope the question is clear. It's a very good question. Why does Hashem repeat, so to speak? It just seems like a repetition of the mitzvahs. What was the difference between the mitzvahs given before and the mitzvahs given after? So Rav Schwab says as follows, with the giving of the Torah, The laws of the Torah became an integral part of the laws of nature. The laws of Torah now became part of nature. Just like the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Just like if there are heavy storm clouds, it will rain. Just like if there's a thunderstorm, you'll hear thunder. Those are all parts of nature. The observance and the laws of the Torah now became part of nature itself. Meaning, the mitzvot now have the ability to elevate the world to a state of greater perfection. Conversely, transgression of the mitzvot will have a destructive effect on the world. They're now part of nature, post-Matan Torah. It's fascinating. So pre-Matan Torah, they were incumbent upon the individual. I, as an individual, had to keep Shabbos because I was taught Shabbos at Mara. After Matan Torah, the laws of Torah become part of nature. And now the observance of these laws have a profound spiritual effect on nature positively, or not keeping them negatively. So after Matan Torah, when someone is Michal Shabbos, Chas V'Shalom, it doesn't just affect him. It has ramifications in the whole natural world negatively. However, when somebody keeps Shabbos, like they're meant to keep Shabbos, we can affect the whole order of the natural world in a very positive way. Therefore, says Rav Schwab, it's a very, very beautiful Chiddush and Pshah. The world itself became subject to the mitzvahs of the Torah. The Jewish people are appointed as God's emissaries. We are charged with elevating and perfecting all worlds, upper and lower, by adhering to the laws of the Torah. And he says something so interesting. What a Chiddush as a proof of this. In Parshas Yisro, originally, Parshas Yisro Perek Yates is the prelude to Matan Torah. So in Parshas Yisro, first Hashem told Moshe, listen carefully, in Shemos 19:12, Perek Yates Pasuk Yibes, V'higbalta es ha'am saviv le'mor hisham lecham alas bahar. You shall set boundaries on the people. V'higbalta, like a gvul. Make a gvul for the people around the mountain, saying, don't go up the mountain. V'higbalta es ha'am. However, on the day of the giving of the Torah, there was a different warning. I mamish never noticed this till I read this. It's a beautiful pshat. On the day of the giving of the Torah, 1923, Perek Yud Tes Pasuchav Gimel, listen carefully now. Hashem told Moshe, Lo yuchal ha'am la'alos el har Sinai. Okay, Hashem instructed Moshe, the people should not approach the mountain. And Moshe said to Hashem, Lo yuchal ha'am la'alos el har Sinai. The people are unable to go up to har Sinai. Ki ata ha'edosa banu lemer. You warned us saying, Hagbel es ha'har v'kidashto. That's very interesting. Moshe says to Hashem, we cannot possibly go up the mountain because you warned us saying, make a gvul around the mountain and sanctify it. Now, if we were with you, but I know you're all on mute, so we don't have background noise, so everybody can enjoy the shiur in silence, I would ask you what's the difference between the first pasuk and the second pasuk. The first pasuk, Shemos Perek Yates Pasuk Yudbeis, listen carefully, Hashem told Moshe, v'hig balta es ha'am, saviv, hishamru lachem alos bahar. Put a border around the nation. They cannot go up the mountain. However, on the day of the giving of the Torah, Hashem says to Moshe, nobody better touch this mountain. And Moshe says, we're not going to touch the mountain because you warned us saying, Hagbel es ha'har. So what's the kasha? The kasha is, in preparation for Matan Torah, a few days before Matan Torah, we are told, Higbalta es ha'am. The day of Matan Torah, we're told, Hagbel es ha'har. Why the switch from warn the people, set a gavul, a boundary for the nation, but on the day of Matan Torah becomes set a boundary for the mountain? It's a good question. If anyone's going to remember this next year by Parshas Yisro or by Matan Torah, Shavuos, it's a beautiful verse. So Rav Schwab writes as follows. In the former verse, the first verse, Hashem instructed Moshe to set boundaries for the people. V'higbalta es ha'am. Meaning, each individual, as an individual, every person that makes up the nation, was barred from ascending the mountain. No one's allowed to go up to the mountain. In the latter verse, however, which describes the actual day of Matan Torah itself, Moshe ascribed boundaries to the mountain. Why? Because if you remember what we said something so beautiful. Asiyas ha-mitzvos, shmiras ha-mitzvos, post-Matan Torah, does not only change us as individuals, it has an effect on the entire world. Because with Matan Torah, the mitzvos now affect all of nature, upper realms, lower realms, physical, metaphysical, gashmias, kedusha, ruchnias. The mitzvos and the Torah becomes embedded into teva. So just like if you pollute the ocean ad nauseum, you'll ruin that whole ecosystem. You'll destroy the ocean. Nature cannot tolerate the schmutz. We'll kill all the fish. I'm destroying our world with plastic. We happen to be that we are. But that has a spiritual parallel. If we contaminate the world with chilul Shabbos, chas v'sham, remember, chilul Shabbat actually only means mechalel, to make Shabbos chol. If we make our Shabbos a chol, then we are polluting in the spiritual realm the actual whole world. Because once after Zachar Siyam HaShabbos HaKadsho, or Shamar Siyam HaShabbos HaKadsho, after Matan Torah, the mitzvos now affect the whole world. Before Matan Torah, they were incumbent upon individuals. So when we got Shabbos at Mara, the end of Perek Tezvav in Bishalach, it was for each individual as an individual, for him and his family to keep Shabbos. Why does Hashem need to tell to me again a Matan Torah? Because now it affects the whole world. Your Shmira Shabbos, or Chalila, Achilul Shabbos, does not only affect me or you as an individual and your family. It has ramifications in the whole world. Rav Schwab says we see a proof of this in the instructions to the people. Before Matan Torah, days before, Higbalta es ha'am. Every individual has to have a boundary. On the day of Matan Torah itself, Higbalta es ha'har, Hagbel es ha'har. Now even nature, even the mountain is going to be affected by my Shmir Shabbos. Hashem commanded Moshe to warn the people a second time, don't ascend the mountain. Because now not only were individuals prohibited from ascending the mountain, but the mountain itself has to have boundaries. It becomes inherently off limits through Matan Torah because the mountain itself will now be affected as something in nature by our Shmir Samitzvos or Chalila V'chas, our transgression of the mitzvos. What a beautiful, unique, and novel pshat. So you might, let's just recap very quickly before I move on to Rav Yisachar Fran. Why do I need Shabbos at Mara and then Shabbos again in Parshas Yisro? He told it to me, I'm not on Torah. He already told it to me at Mara. Hashem Chalid has nothing better to do than repeat himself, God forbid. I can't say that. You already told me Kibbut Av Eim at Mara. Why didn't you tell me Kibbut Av Eim? And that's Eretz Dibros. You told me Achdus Hashem and the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Why didn't you tell me Anocha Hashem Elkecha? You told me not to do Avodah Zarah and the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Why didn't you tell me Lo Yeh Chalayu Mecherim Alpanai? So Rav Schwab brings us a very beautiful, unique, and novel pshat, which is that before Matan Torah, the mitzvos were incumbent upon us as individuals. After Matan Torah, the mitzvos and Torah become woven into the fabric of Teva itself. Just like the moon waxes and wanes, the sun rises and sets, the tides ebb and flow, birds migrate and then don't migrate, they nest and they fly from their nest. Asiyas HaMitzvos impacts not only me as an individual after Matan Torah, but the whole entire world. So now you have an added dimension to your Shmira Shabbos. When you keep Shabbos, or Chas V'Shalom if someone does not keep Shabbos, it doesn't only affect you and your neshama and your family, hopefully for the positive and proper Shmira Shabbos, but it now affects the ramifications in the whole world. What's the proof of that? V'higbalta es ha'am days before Matan Torah, but on the day of Matan Torah, v'hagbal es ha'har. So beautiful. It's just tremendous idea. Wow. The mountain itself, indicating nature itself, is now about to be changed. And there are ripple effects that will wave through nature from my Shmir Shabbos or Chas V'Shalom Chilul Shabbos. And it's very interesting because in the Hani Machas biography, Allah HaShalom Zuchsa Tagein Aleinu, in the Hani Machas biography, she has a number of stories or vignettes related to this very idea. How your keeping, she says, of a mitzvah affects not only yourself, but others as well. So she tells a story. It's very, very interesting. She tells a very interesting story regarding Rabbi Tzinleya Cook. Okay? And Hani Machlis tells the following story, that it was one Shabbos, Rabbi Tzinleya Cook, I don't have the book in front of me, but I'm almost 99% sure that this is how the story is told, took upon herself not to read newspapers on Shabbos. She was only reading Dvar B'Shabbat Kedusha. Even newspapers that were Jewish printed publications, she wasn't going to read them. And one day at 4:30 or whatever it is, she walked by and she read a headline in the newspaper. Someone after came and told her that at that moment they felt a tremendous weakness. Rabbi Cook taught that it wasn't their fault because she stumbled in her Shmir Shabbos. I'm not saying you shouldn't read the Jewish newspapers. I enjoy Mishpacha. We read the Jewish home. Some of my family members. I'm not saying that. It's the idea that my Shmir Shabbos can have an impact beyond my own Dalet Amos. And Hani Malchus tells over the following. She said it was one Shabbos morning and she was looking at a piece of cake based on this teaching of Rabbi Tzinei Cook. And she says, even though she was told, she's chassidish, I think she says, she could eat before she daven. She writes that in the book. Everyone should follow their own halacha. I'm not telling you what to do halachically at all. That's not the point of the story. So she was walking by and she thought, I really shouldn't eat this cake. But she said she had a tremendous weakness, Henny. She had a big yetzer hara, and she ate the cake. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning, she says. Or 10 o'clock, whatever time it was. And after Shabbos, she was speaking to someone. You know, Henny knew so many people from all walks of life. And the person told her, Henny, I don't know what happened to me. But yesterday, Shabbos morning at 10 o'clock, I felt a tremendous weakness and I texted on my phone. That hasn't happened to me in so long. And Henny said, it's not your fault. Henny understood that her giving in to her Yetzer Hara, again, if your Yetzer is not tea cake, that's not the point. Her giving into her Yetzer and having a little bit of a Yerida on Shabbos for Henny caused somebody else to have a Yerida. But interestingly, Henny writes that after she ate the cake, she felt very bad. She told Hashem she's sorry. And she continues that this person said to her, but usually after I text on Shabbos, I have the whole day I spend being Michal Shabbos. I tell myself, once I texted, there's no point. But he said, today, I felt so bad after I did it. I put my phone away. I said, Hashem, I'm never going to do it again. I'm so sorry. And Hani understood that her Shmir Shabbos, her eating the cake on the one hand, her doing teshuva, so to speak, on the other. I'm not telling you eating cake is a sin. I'm not saying you need to do teshuva for it. That's not the point. Everyone knows their own level. Everyone knows their own Kabbalahs. But the way that we observe Shabbos has ramifications far beyond our immediate Dalet Amos. It's not only about you and your home and your family and your four walls. Because Shabbos became part of the fabric of nature post Matan Torah, so the mitzvah of Shabbos that we got on Mara is not the same impact as the mitzvah we got of Shabbos on Matan Torah. On Mara, it was a commandment on every Jewish tent, you keep Shabbos, act as individuals. V'igbalta es ha'am. After Matan Torah, the Hagbel es ha'har indicated that this mitzvah that I do, this Shmira Shabbos, this Zechira Shabbos, this Oneg Shabbos, this Kedusha Shabbos, has ripple effects because it becomes part of the fabric of nature itself. So I can impact nature in a very positive way and impact my world in a positive way. We should have these machshavos, I think. The world around us today needs such a healing. It needs such a spiritual healing. The world is in a terrible state. Amish, a terrible state. You have to be living in a cave somewhere. Remember, we spoke about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in his cave. With your head in the sand, to not see what's happening in the world today. And the world today needs such a spiritual healing. So when you keep Shabbos, Be'ezus Hashem, in a few hours, what a powerful machshava. Until now, we've been speaking about Shabbos, how it affects me, i.e. you. Is your bed ready for Shabbos? We saw last week in the Gemara. Is your table set for Shabbos? Does your home look different? Is the food tastier? Are we dressed for Shabbos? Do we have different turns, mirrors? But keep in mind, you're affecting the whole world. The physical world, the metaphysical world, the Gashmis world, the Ruchnis world. Olam Haza, Olam Haba. Not only you as an individual, but now the Har, the mountain, which represents nature, is affected by the ripple effects of my Shmiras Shabbos. And that's why keeping Shabbos before Matan Torah, Mara, is not the same as the command to keep Shabbos after Matan Torah, Parshas Yisro. That's why. Now we can explain perhaps why Avram Avinu was told to do Bris Milah on Perek Yud Zayin, a Bereishis. Aram Vinu is told, he will perfect himself. He will not be called Avram. He will be called Avraham. She won't be called Sarai. She will be called Sarah. He will have a son. He will be named Yitzchak. And on the eighth day, Yimol B'sar Alosam. So why, in the beginning of Parshas Tazria, do we need to be taught to do Bris Milah? Isha ki Tazria v'yaldo zachar v'tum ha-shivas yamim. Why do we need to be taught to do Bris Milah? So I thought Avram Avinu, the father of the Avraham Goyim, the father of Knesset Israel, the founder of our nation, was already told to do Bris Milah in Perek Zion. So that's enough. Why need you tell me to do Bris Milah again? Parshas Tazria. The verse is kind of repetitive. But I'm sure I didn't have too much in Chas V'Shalom. But I got Bris Milah already. It should be enough that Avram was told to do Bris Milah. It's interesting because Rav Soloveitchik actually points out that we keep Bris Milah not because of the patriarchal covenant. The covenant, the bris that God made with the patriarchs, we keep Bris Milah because of the Sinaitic covenant. Sinaitic, the covenant that was given to us at Har Sinai. What's the difference? Why isn't Perek Zayin bracious enough to tell me to do Bris Milah because Avram was told to do Bris Milah? Now, with this pshat of Rav Shimon Schwab, we can very clearly understand why. Because before, Bris Milah was for an individual. After Bris Milah, the mitzvah is still incumbent upon the father of the baby as an individual, yes. But it has ramifications in the whole world. Higbalta es ha'am, hagbel es ha'har. My mitzvah, as one Jew, has a ripple effect all over. So when Henny ate that cake, she felt that it caused someone to have a spiritual yirida, and he texted. When Henny went, she says, after she ate the cake, she went to do his bodedus. She said, Hashem, I'm sorry. I don't know why I ate the cake. Please don't take umbrage with this story. It's not about cake. It's about what her, she felt, was a yirida. But she wanted to do his bodedus. And she spoke to Hashem and said, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it. I fell and I failed. That person told her, I texted. But after I texted, I did something I never did before. I put away the phone. I went to shul and I observed the whole rest of Shabbos. Henny understood it was her actions that affected that person. So even though we got so many mitzvahs before Matan Torah, which was given on a mountain, in a desert, that's cool. Maybe that's another reason. I just thought of something. This insight of Rav Schwab is so far-reaching. By Matan Torah, you have so many natural elements involved in the process of Matan Torah. The mountain is smoking. There's fire. There are clouds. There's thunder. There's a mountain itself. You're in the desert. It wasn't given to us. We weren't all elevated to Shemayim. I just thought of something else that's very cool that I think we could say based on this. Hashem could have taken us all up to Shemayim, all 600,000 souls of Bnei Yisrael, plus the woman and the children and Levi, and the elderly. He could have taken us all up to Shemayim and given us the Torah in Shemayim. Why? Because the Torah is Tol Kedusha. Then we would have come down here, we would have applied it here. But he gave it amongst the most natural elements. A mountain represents nature. In fact, I just heard Rabbi Zevlov talking about this a couple of days ago in a shir. A mountain how it represents nature, Avram Avinu, Bahar Hashem Yira'eh. On a mountain, in a desert, with fire, and thunder, and smoke, and lightning. That's all natural elements. Maybe it's coming to teach us. It seems to be, not maybe, based on Rav Schwab. It's coming to teach us how our Asiyas HaMitzvos now affects the whole world. By the way, if anyone wants to know where this insight is from, based on this class today, I'm quoting from the Rav Schwab Haggadah, put up by Art School, page 161 to 163. Sometimes people listen to Shiram online, and then they email me to say, where is that insight from? So that is where it's from for your reference. This is a new Haggadah. My daughter bought actually this past year at the YU book sale. First impression was March 2019. Page 161 to 163 in the Rav Shimon Schwab Haggadah. So now we have a whole added element to your Shmir Shabbos. So when you usher in Shabbos later, never mind the effect that you're having on the world. When we say Shabbat Shalom, think of those words. It should really be a Shavisa of Shalom. When you cease from being involved in this world, we should bring Shalom through our lighting of the candles. We should bring Shalom to the whole world, not only to our own home. Furthermore, think of all the Jews, Rachman Alitzan, all the Tinok Shenishpu, Tinokim Shenishpu. They're captured souls. It's like they're in captivity. And perhaps my Shmir Shabbos can have a profound effect in some way on another Jew. Maybe they're not observing Shabbos, but maybe they have a machshava that it's Shabbos. And maybe that came from my Shmir Shabbos before Matan Torah that was not possible. If we were only commanded Shabbos and Mara, it was not possible to affect somebody else because it wasn't in the laws of nature that your Shmiras HaMitzvos would affect him this. But after Matan Torah, Hagbel Es HaHar, now you can affect everybody else with your Shmir Shabbos, not only your own family. How powerful is that? I will end, remember we're really talking about Dayinu. I will end with an insight from the Rabbi Yisachar friend on the Haggadah. Okay? This too is Art Scroll, Rabbi Yisachar friend on the Haggadah. So he specifically in Dayinu speaks, and this is January, okay, so this was 2018, the Rav Shlomo Haggadah was 2019. Okay. So in Dayinu we say, Ilu nasan lanu es ha-Shabbos. I think this is a beautiful conclusion to our class and our understanding of Shabbos and how it affects not only you and your home and your table and your spouse, your children, your grandchildren, your friend, your guests. It has effect you can't even imagine. And bells ha-har. Ripple effects throughout nature, like the aftershock of the earthquake in a positive way. Your Shmir Shabbos is like a positive earthquake that sends shockwaves of Kedusha throughout the world. We say in Dayenu, Ilu nasan lanu es ha-Shabbos v'lo kervanu l'fnei har Sinai Dayenu. And he given us the Shabbos, but not brought us to Har Sinai, it would have been enough for us. How is that possible? Rabbi Fran writes, had we been charged with the task of formulating the text of the Haggadah, writes Rabbi Fran, I highly doubt we would have dared write a phrase stating, Hashem given us Shabbos, but not brought us to Har Sinai, that would have sufficed. What does this mean? So he says, perhaps the answer lies in an incident that occurred with one of my students who was enrolled in a CPA review course. Before each class, there was an optional pre-class review. My student is very conscientious. He attended each of those pre-class reviews. So there was a class review before the class review. And he missed a class that was held on Shabbos. An Arab who was enrolled in the same course asked him why he was absent. You don't understand why I don't come on Saturday, my student replied. You know I'm Jewish. You know I can't come on Saturday. You know, that's what I like about you Jews, the Arab replied. You're true to your faith. You keep your religion. That's why you guys are still around. Rabbi Fran comments, sometimes we need an Arab to remind us what has preserved us for all these years. The non-Jews, even those who we count amongst our worst enemies, understand. The unfortunate reality is that sometimes the only ones who don't recognize what has preserved us throughout the generations is us, ourselves. In truth, our survival is unfathomable. A historical anomaly that defies logic. In other words, our survival is our historical aberration that defies logic. The story goes that Frederick the Great once asked the members of his cabinet for a brief proof of God's existence. To paraphrase Masechet Shabbos, I believe it's Lamed Aleph. Later, but I think. Hillel was asked by a convert, teach me Torah on one foot. So Frederick the Great asked his cabinet, teach me about God on one foot. The minister responded, I have a two-word answer to prove you that God exists. Quote, the Jews. But my student's classmate may have tapped into a more specific answer. More than any other mitzvah, says Rabbi Fran, our commitment to keep Shabbos week after week, no matter the circumstances, represents our weekly reconnection with Hashem. Remember how we started this year? Shabbos gives us the opportunity to reconnect to God. And even when Shabbos leaves, we have a Malava Malka, because the king left you precious gems behind. Rabbi Zev Lev quotes the Zohar, says, Shabbos fuels your whole week. So every week you reconnect, you recharge. My kid says we're on low battery. We need to recharge before we peel the carrots. We did so much already. We're recharged on Shabbos. We reconnect. And it takes us throughout the whole week. Rabbi Fran says that reconnection, that weekly reconnection with Hashem, is an opportunity to remind ourselves who we are. We are a nation whose mission is to represent the one and only God who created everything in this world. Certainly, we must keep all the mitzvahs of the Torah with equal passion. But the mitzvah of Shabbos is a mission statement of sorts. Because Shabbos is a mission statement. It reminds us of who we are, to whom we belong, and it reminds us whose name we carry in this world. And that alone is a tremendous merit that preserves us throughout all the generations. I thank everybody for joining our learning. I wish you a true Shabbat Shalom, a Shavisa of Shalom, when you take a cessation, a Shavisa, from the inanities from the hecticness, from the difficulty, from the stress of this world, remember what your Shmirah Shabbos brings to the world. Number one, it testifies that there is a creator. It's a reminder of our miraculous survival. And it is a lesson that through our Shmirah Shabbos, we went from Higbalta Es Ha'am to Hagbel Es Ha'har. Our Asiya Shabbos, our Shmirah Shabbos, our Kedusha Shabbos, our Ahava Shabbos has ramifications beyond our own Dalet Amos. We can literally, with Shabbos, change the world. I wish you a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you for joining me. Kol Tov, everybody.